The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
There's an ongoing debate surrounding the lack of 24/7 hospital services in Ireland. Weekend MRIs, medical imaging, really doesn't happen. There's insufficient weekend rostering of consultants, and there's the underprovision of permanent nursing positions. All very pertinent issues in the health service. And to go through them, we've got Dr. Chris Luke, former consultant in emergency medicine, and Phil Nihay, General Secretary of the Irish Nurses and Midwives Organisation. Good morning to you both. Chris Luke, I'll turn to you in Marconi House, first of all. Logicare, new contracts for consultants that would see them working at the weekends. Hasn't made a jot of difference.
Not sure about that, although I was talking to friends in the hospitals in Cork yesterday, and they're telling me that there's been, you know, fairly significant changes in terms of rostering over the past couple of months. So I think we're evolving towards greater consultant cover. And just to put the record straight, you know, since I arrived in Cork, for example, in 1999, there was always a consultant every day of the year, unless one, there was two of us originally. So we were on a one and two in terms of coming in and providing cover. And as the numbers of consultants, you know, increased, you know, the cover was greater and greater. And I know at the moment that there's sort of consultant cover in 8 to 8, more or less every weekday, and then sort of 8 to 2, 3, and then people coming in on call after that. And we're talking about 2 or 3 or 4 consultants every day in each department on the shop floor, and more on the weekend. So I think there's more cover than we would be given credit for. And of course, you know, just about 50% of consultants signed up to that new public contract. But
to be fair, I take it you're talking about the emergency department there.
Yeah,
which is good to have them there. But it's the consultant upstairs when I am ready for discharge on a Saturday and I have to sit there until Monday, probably late Monday afternoon by the time I eventually get turfed out. That's where the shortfall is happening, is it not?
Well, I agree. To some extent, there are blockages or obstacles to discharge at the weekends and out of hours. But that's largely out with the control of either the hospital or the consultant who's responsible for the patient. I mean, you're talking about the shortage of nursing home and community hospital beds. You're talking about a reduced availability of pharmacies to dispense medication. You're talking about a shrinking population of general practitioners. You're talking about gaps in the provision of district nursing, occupational therapists, and so on and so on. So when you talk about the consultant, I often think it's a bit like talking about the number 10 in the Irish rugby team. You know, the consultant is merely perhaps a particularly prominent member of a large team. And unless you have all these people around him or her, there's not that much they can do to progress the patient in terms of the journey from admission to bed, from bed to a discharge and to another bed and to home. So, you know, the good news is that there are ever more consultants and ever more staff in the health service. But of course, what people have to keep remembering that while there's always record numbers of people employed, record amounts of spending, there are also record numbers of people living in the country, record numbers of aging people, and an increased number of people with, different languages, different cultures and that kind of challenge.
The same number of acute beds in the system as we had when you started your medical career. Is that not the big problem looming?
Yeah, well, it's not looming. I mean, you know, Jonathan, the headline on the Times of London's front page today is how doctors are now being employed, for example, in Brighton, the Royal Sussex, specifically to care for elderly people on trolleys in the corridors of that hospital.
Now you were doing that 20 years ago.
Exactly.
Chris.
No. 30 years ago, the first corridor care started in Liverpool, the Royal Liverpool, in 1995, and we've had it ever since. And of course, the problem is that some smart Alec in the late 80s suggested that with all the technology and the robots and the automation that we wouldn't actually need beds for human beings. And that was the sort of pretext. But the truth is that in 1980 or thereabouts, we had something like 17,000 beds. And now in 2025, we're still only at around about 15,000 beds. And notwithstanding the promises over the last 5 years by a series of health ministers here that we'd have, for example, another 3,000 new beds, you know, by 2030. That is a glacial pace of replacement. The reality is, with a surging population, surging numbers of elderly people, and, you know, surging complexity, we need far more beds and far sooner than 2030.
Okay. Phil Lehay of the Irish Nurses and Midwives Organisation. Phil, for you and your members, the frustration is omnipresent. I'm guessing it's all day, every day.
That's right. And I suppose, you know, we can debate all day, you know, what the cause is. I think the biggest concern that we have at the moment is that it has become so so ordinary to have overcrowded hospitals, to have poor care delivery. Our members, the biggest problem they have is that they're working in an environment that they regularly say they can see where the patient is suffering just because of the environment. It's not possible to provide safe and timely care to somebody on a ward in the middle of the night when you're staffed for 24 patients, but you actually have over 30. And some of them are in a sitting room, a makeshift ward with no equipment, no oxygen, no suction. We had an experience last week, which our members contacted the union about, which said, you know, just in that scenario, somebody had an incident and they couldn't physically get the equipment into the room because of the nature of the makeup of the room. That's just not acceptable. And you see, and I'm sure Chris will agree with this, it is the people who are registered with professional bodies that have to answer for a lot of this. They're the ones who are going to be hauled before inquiries and investigative processes, statutory processes. And the people who make the decisions to put them in this situation don't ever seem to have to answer. And that's what our members are now objecting to. They're saying, you know, I'm going in here. I'm a registered professional. I am qualified. I am educated to do the best job that I can. But my environment is preventing me from doing that. And that's simply not good enough.
It's physical infrastructure again. But the other thing, Phil, that I have, and I've personally experienced this again in the last week, why are we not giving nurses more responsibility? I've interacted with advanced nurse practitioners on a number of occasions over the course of the last 2 years. And I have to say, I have been blown away at their knowledge,
absolutely,
their professionism.
It's incredible.
But why are we not using more talented nurses who are possibly stuck at a grade, want to maybe specialise in a little bit of something, and use them to help reduce the backlog, speed up the flow through, take the pressure off the likes of Dr. Chris Luke and so on?
Well, it's not about taking the pressure off the medicines. They're two separate professions. And nursing-led services are well advanced in a lot of countries. We're beginning to go there, and we have a modest enough number. We're supposed to be getting to 3% of the total nursing population at advanced practice level, but we're not there. And it's about funding. It's very simple. The health service constantly imposes embargoes. If you want to grow that type of a service, which is a good service, you're absolutely right. Nurses are well able, well educated, can lead services, do it every day of the week. There are nurses today leading on chemotherapy services, leading on all sorts of advanced services. And the reason there aren't more of them is a deliberate policy by their employer, which is curbing recruitment and not investing in advanced and clinical nurse specialist practice and training more students. We were in the Labour Court this week with a case which is absolutely ludicrous, where the HSE are arguing against clinical placement coordinators who support students. We want more students. We want more nurses in these roles. Why is the employer fighting against them? It makes no sense.
A very basic point, Chris Luke, that has come in here. The HSE will not get better until their system is computerised. A third of their administration staff are removed. More clinical are employed. None of this will happen because the unions will block it. Well, the unions issue aside, how ridiculous is it in 2025 that a nurse, the first thing that happens when you walk into an ED is they open a paper file and start filling it in?
Yeah, I mean, that's been a thorn in the side of clinicians, healthcare professionals for years. I mean, I was using a 10-year-old computer with 10-year-old software when I was working in two of the teaching hospitals in Ireland's second city for, you know, for years and years and years. I'm having said that, now again, there's always the caveat where we are constantly sort of muddling along and slowly growing. And I was delighted to see the launch of the HSE app yesterday, which I think Conor Pope reviewed in the Irish Times. And, you know, he sees, as I do, considerable promise in that sort of thing. But we are so far behind and we really need to catch up with the sort of way the ordinary enterprises and private sector use these apps. I mean, we really have to catch up. And there needs to be far more consultation with people at the front, at the pointy end of healthcare. You know, what do you need and what do you need now?
I'm just actually didn't realise there was a HSE Health app announced yesterday. I missed that. I'm downloading it as we speak. This will be a live, Jess Kelly will give out to me. This is a live review of the HSE Health app. But, you know, it's all very well having an app, but then we've a text like this here. I'm 73, just come out of St. James's Hospital. I'm told I need an MRI for my heart. There is a 5-year waiting list for the public. I can get it done next week if I go private.
Yeah, I mean, that is a source of terrible heartache. And I was constantly confronted with that sort of dilemma every single day in Cork, in the inner city particularly, with people who did not have private insurance and who needed an MRI of their knee or their shoulder or whatever. And I used to sort of split the difference and say, you know, well, for €200, you could probably get an MRI of the knee and that would catapult you up the waiting list. So there are ways around it. But the reality is that there is a two-tier system in this country and it's just simply not fair. And illustrating why consultants can't make decisions, because if you haven't got the scan, you shouldn't really be proceeding into the joint or the knee or into the heart.
Yeah, I'd love to know if that MRI is working at the weekends, which is the other side.
I know it's working one of the two hospitals in Cork, but not in the other. So that is a huge talking point.
I have failed on the first step of locking the HSE app.
Well, Conor Pope did say that it had crashed on him as he was halfway through yesterday.
I need a MyGov ID. I don't know if I have one. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to do that off air because otherwise it'll just distract me while I'm here. Endoscopy procedures and gastroenterology surgeries consistently being cancelled due to the A&D overflow every Tuesday and Monday in Beaumont Hospital. So there's another classic example.
My solution to that, Jonathan, again, is I'm afraid fairly simple, and some of it's happening. You know, the happiest staff and the happiest patients in the NHS repeatedly for decades have been the ones who attended dedicated units, dedicated hospitals, the orthopaedic hospitals, the neurological hospitals, the cardiothoracic hospitals, because you don't have this endless clash between the influx of the distressed and the urgent of the emergency cases with those who have been on waiting lists for years. Those two streams of people have got to be separated. And I think one of the ways to do that is to have separate, dedicated, elective, as opposed to emergency units.
Okay. Phil Nihay, full disclosure here. I'm a board member of a voluntary hospital that is an elective hospital. And I'm always blown away at the difference between the two, because the elective hospital is sitting there doing a specific job. It knows its abilities, it knows its throughput, and it knows what it can do. The difference between the nursing staff there and the nursing staff in an acute hospital is immense. And I think that goes to the core of the issue as well, that you're putting people under pressure to a degree that they shouldn't be put under pressure.
Exactly. But also I think that it's not the difference in the staff. It's a difference in their level of stress and their level of burnout, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Sláintecare set out in 2017 that we needed 3 elective-only hospitals. Now, I've been hearing the HSE and the department and the previous minister and the current minister reference these hospitals. You know, 2017 is a long time ago, and there's been a lot of people on trolleys since. We need these elective hospitals. We need more than 3. And we have plenty of examples of where it works. It works better when you have urgent booked admissions, as opposed to, EDs. Like Beaumont Hospital, just from what that caller said, Beaumont Hospital is the neuro centre for Ireland. It is the centre for very serious cases that come from every hospital around the country. And it's also the local hospital for that community. I mean, it's not that it's doing both. It's doing three different roles, because it's doing elective, it's doing emergency, but it's also doing a tertiary referral, as are many of the large hospitals in the country. So you must remember that if you have an appendix in Beaumont from the community, that procedure is as urgent as the referral from somebody in Donegal or Kerry who has a neuro incident.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we need these hospitals, and we need somebody to come along with a common sense approach and say, look, our population is 5.2 million or whatever it is, and it's going to grow next year. We know that. Our age group is going to be over 75. That's growing. We have all these stats. So why aren't we designing the service around the demographic? We're not.
Well, can I ask you about that? Because the surgical hubs, right, there's three surgical hubs, to the best of my knowledge, that are being fast-tracked, that will open at various stages over the next 18 months, co-located with existing facilities. But my understanding is there's not going to be a single new bed, an inpatient bed, opened with any of them. So these are just going to be done, built for day cases.
Yeah, as we understand it. And we've asked this question a number of times. This will be largely concentrated on day surgery. There won't be overnight. Now, that's a mistake, I think. I think there are procedures that don't need to be in the acute hospitals, but that won't be done on a day case basis. There's a lot of advancements, and a lot more cases are now being done on a day case basis. But we must beef up our community services then, because if we have more people being discharged post-surgery into the community, into their homes, we must make sure there's a service there that can follow through on that. And at the moment, we are short about 700 public health nurses, for example. We know that. There's a crisis in recruitment. There's an embargo on recruitment. And we're saying, we're developing everything. We're implementing Sláintecare, is what the HSE are saying. They're not, actually, because the community has not developed to the pace that it must and it has to. Changing the structures and putting in regional managers isn't sufficient. You must have the staff who deliver the care to people in their homes.
I think we're still running in tandem. We've got the regional managers and the old system working together side by side for at least the next little while. I had a stress test from my heart back in August, says this listener. I'm still waiting for my results, says that listener. But Blanchardstown Hospital, ring them and don't hang up the phone until you get it. The entire health system here is a disgrace, says another texter. And those responsible should be ashamed. We're constantly being fed waffle about how it's improving, but the public have yet to see it. We are slowly creeping towards the American model, where if you don't have expensive insurance, you will wait and wait and suffer. The government is happy to watch us head that way, and it takes problems with public health out of their hands and greases the palms of the private sector. Somewhat cynical there, Chris Luke, I would argue, because when you do get access to the system holds up well, because you're dealing with the individuals and the professionals, be they doctors or nurses or whatever. It is that point of access that's the problem here, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I was a victim of Thatcher's internal market reforms of the NHS in the 80s and 90s. And, you know, it was based on this kind of, is it Milton Friedman's idea that, you know, competition was good, but you can't compete within the health service. An internal competition within the NHS or our health system means that a porter in the hospital has to fight both with the general medical ward and the emergency department ward for a trolley or for a chair. That's what it actually looks like. So when you've got the clash of the two streams of elective and urgent, you've got this endless friction, which is absolutely nightmarish. And unhappy staff make for unhappy patients. So you're absolutely right. If you go around the health service ecosystem in this island, you will find a magnificent oases of tranquility and excellence and very, very happy patients and staff. But it's where there's this friction, this clash between the elective and the urgent. And you're absolutely right about the American, that contributor is absolutely right. We're a long way down the road of Americanization in almost every aspect of our economy and society.
Yeah, but what I find,
if I could
somewhat
just add,
go
Chris,
on, Phil. Yeah,
I think the debate about the two-tier health system needs to be reopened, because I heard accounts of a consultant, an oncologist, yesterday, being very concerned about oncology medicines now only being available if you could afford them. I mean, Is that really what the country we want to live in? That your life, drugs that your life actually can be prolonged by or depend on, will only be available if you can afford them.
And we had this before. We had this entire conversation before, and there was a national outrage, and cancer services were improved. And now we're back to square one on this, aren't we?
Yes, but also,
we are back to the idea that you can get the treatment if you can pay for it.
Yes, but also we have a culture now of outsourcing public services, outsourcing. We have requested from the HSE the costings of outsourcing a lot of their admin to very large companies. We're saying, well, why are you doing that? And, you know, when you have an embargo on recruitment, and how much is it costing you? And also, we know that over 82% of all of our long-term care is now provided through the private sector. You know, the state has a responsibility to its older citizens, in our view. That's what Sláintecare said. And why are we outsourcing it? It's not right.
One to finish for you, Chris, and you'll be delighted with this one for your former colleagues. Had to attend the fracture clinic at CUH. X-ray, cast, consultation, in and out in 2 hours. Brilliant, says Brian. So there is examples of good service.
Yeah, and
we should never forget that.
Can I also say, just again, because I've long championed and long been a great enthusiast for advanced nurse practitioners, they are one of the most transformational developments over the last 25 years. And I could not agree more with Phil than we need to see more. We have absolutely fabulous nurse practitioners in Cork that I've worked with for years.
And again, without going into personal details, I've had two of them.
And I cannot understand why.
Incredible.
I cannot understand why there are not more of them, because they provide a magnificent service.
Okay, we'll leave it there for now. Dr. Chris Luke, a consultant in emergency medicine, and Phil Nihay, General Secretary of the Irish Nurses and Midwives Organisation. Thank you both very much for
the Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.